I have been very impressed with the book design yet again on this book. So there's going to be a way for you guys out there, anybody of you guys out there listening, to enter into a little friendly competition here to see if you can win a copy of this book. I'm going to explain more at the end. It's going to have to do with the competition between my co-hosts here. So stick around to the end of this episode and I will spell out how you can win a copy of Isles of Enderdark and maybe laugh at Paul and Trevor along the way. So it'll be great. Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast, although this is episode 277 and we are not reading from the Stormlight Archive. We are diving into Isles of the Emberdark. And I have gotten a promotion. I am now in the driver's seat of this podcast because I have read this book and my co-hosts, Paul and Trevor, have not. How's it feel, gentlemen, to be in the new reader seat? Trevor, what are you feeling over there?
Has Noadon ever been to First of the Sun?
Ooh, there's a question. Ooh, we're starting out with the spicy ones right off the beginning.
I am feeling more nervous than I thought I would be. I'm going to get ridiculed for my predictions. I have never been in this seat. I have a bold prediction. This episode... and I'm going to get laughed at for it. I've never had this feeling.
Trevor, you have had this feeling. Not for your lousy predictions, but for your lousy feedback on things in previous books, such as your feelings about 12124, etc.
So you're
used to it. It's just a new flavor.
I feel differently than Stormlight predictions, because Stormlight predictions, I was like 95% that I was correct. Even if I would trip and fall on my face, I still felt confident when I made them. Now I feel 3% confident and 97% self-conscious.
That's fair. I, for one, feel 90% confident in my predictions, so we can follow me as the leading example.
There we go. There we go. Well, I am going to pitch you two guys against each other later in this episode, so we'll get plenty of that. There'll be some good competition to compare between Paul and Trevor over here. But I'm very excited to be jumping into this book with you guys. I enjoyed this book quite a bit. It was quite a different experience for me to be able to binge read a Brandon Sanderson book. I read the entirety of the book in about 6 days, with the large bulk of it over the course of two, and that is a far cry from how I've read all the rest of these books, with Wind and Truth taking us 11 months to read through, 10
Not
months?
Not quite. 307 days.
There you go. So it was a very different experience for me, and I got a lot out of it. I enjoyed it quite a bit, so I'm excited to attempt to guide you guys through it here as we go. Today we're covering the prologue through chapter 3, and then on top of that, I'm going to ask you guys some big questions up front here right at the beginning of the book, to try and see what you guys think we might be heading into. And also, I just want sound bites for later.
That I have to edit.
Correct.
Sounds great. We should do our announcement before my brief summary.
We can do that. We can do that. So I do have a big announcement. We are going to do something on this podcast that we have never done before. We are going to give away a book. We have a fresh in the shrink wrap copy of Isles of the Emberdark. You want a copy of this book? It is super cool. I have been very impressed with the book design yet again on this book. So there's going to be a way for you guys out there, anybody of you guys out there listening, to enter into a little friendly competition here to see if you can win a copy of this book. I'm going to explain more at the end. It's going to have to do with the competition between my co-hosts here. So stick around to the end of this episode and I will spell out how you can win a copy of Isles of Enderdark and maybe laugh at Paul and Trevor along the way. So it'll be great.
This is not how the competition is going to work, but vote for me.
I don't even have to ask you to vote for me. I'm just going to say you know what to do.
Get you a podcast host that knows the Cosmere. That's all I'll say.
I want to briefly add the book. Isn't this a signed copy, or am I making that up?
I think you're making that up. Although I haven't opened it, so I don't know.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Well,
it may or may not be signed.
I'll get back to my own copy. Let me check my copy.
See if it's signed. I trust Elliot on this.
I don't think it is.
My copy that was ordered at the same time is not signed, so I'm guessing it is not.
Okay. Well, regardless, it's a gorgeous book. I have taken mine out of the shrink wrap, but I've been a good boy, and I have not flipped through it, but it looks stunning at the front. So, yeah.
Well, without any further ado, let's get into the chapters and talk about them. Trevor, do you want to take a shot at summarizing the events of these chapters for us?
Yes, I do. And right off the bat, I have to say something that Elliot would not have experienced yet. Maybe Paul, although Paul hasn't read Skyward. The audio narrator for Starling is Jennifer Jill Araya. And I was astounded to learn that it is not the same narrator as Susie Jackson, who does Skyward, because they sound identical. I was stunned when they were not the same. When I went to listen to this book and listen to the prologue, I was like, oh, cool. They got the same narrator as did Skyward. And I was like, wait. But the name didn't sound familiar at all. So then I went and looked. Two completely different people. They sound identical. Somebody back me up here in the comments. I know there's more audiobook listeners out there who have listened to Skyward. Susie Jackson, Jennifer Jill Araya, you ladies sound identical. Okay. My brief summary. We start off with Starling in the prologue, who is on Yolin. Thank you, Brandon Sanderson, for finally putting Yolin in a book. I appreciate that. She is a super excited 8-year-old girl, but she's also 30. And she's not a girl, she's a dragon. So I hope that wasn't confusing for you. This is her day of ascension, or whatever they call it. She runs out and absorbs sunlight and becomes her full white dragon self. Hooray. And then we completely forget about her. So back to chapter 1 through 3, we are with, as no one is surprised, Six of the Dusk. This was leaked very early to me, so I knew this was Six of the Dusk's book. Except it's 5 years after Six of the Dusk, the novella. In the foreword of this book, Brandon Sanderson made me laugh. I listened to this at work, and Brandon gives explicit permission to skip the flashback chapters, which I thought was really funny. He acknowledges that I needed to incorporate the novella, but in a way that would make sense to people who haven't read the novella. So if you've read the novella, especially recently, feel free to skip the flashback chapters.
I'm going to explain later why you shouldn't do that.
You're going to disagree with Brandon Sanderson?
Yes, I'm going to directly disagree with Brandon Sanderson.
Okay.
Wouldn't be the first time either.
So chapter 1 and chapter 3 are current day dusk. Chapter 2 is flashback dusk. In chapter 1 and 3, Sixth of the Dusk is running his little terrarium exhibit at the fair. And he is explaining how dark and creepy and sinister Patchy is, and how crazy. That's Painter. Are you pointing to Painter in our artwork?
No, I'm pointing at my title.
No, you're mirrored. I see.
Oh. Well, I don't know which side my
thing. There you go.
Is it over here?
Yeah, that's okay.
Now I'm just pointing at nothing, but sorry to interrupt. For those who aren't watching,
audio listeners got nothing out of that. Anyway, Dusk is running his terrarium exhibit and explaining to all the bored children how dark and creepy and sinister these death ants are, and how anything could kill you on Patchy. And he kind of misses it. And he's like, man, those were the good old days. I didn't have to worry about society and normal life and cars. I guess we've got cars. I'm going to have to work on how to shorten these summaries. And chapter three,
it looks,
it's not as easy as it looks. Chapter three, we go and talk to Mother Frond, who tells a whimsical story, shout out to the Wander Sail, about Kokoban. And he's got Kokoban sailing around and fooling all the gods and giants and stuff like that. Flashback Dusk is the opening of Six of the Dusk. He is approaching Patchy on his canoe with his two birds, and one of the birds is shielding him from a big shark thing in the water. The end. What's my time? 10 minutes?
I wasn't timing you, but you did fine. You did fine. You did fine.
I need to shorten those.
You'll get there. You'll get there. All right. So before we jump into talking about these chapters in a little more detail, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about first, just to set the stage, give you guys a few little nuggets to chew on as we head into this book. And all these nuggets that I'm referring to come out of Arcanum Unbounded that we read, at least the vast majority of, quite a long time ago on the podcast. So everything I'm about to tell you, we've already seen and read in Arcanum Unbounded, but they're about to get a lot more relevant. So I'm going to bring them to your attention now. The first thing I wanted to mention is in the Dromenad section of Arcanum Unbounded, where we get a little bit more information about the Dromenad system, which is where we are now, Brandon includes a postscript to Sixth of the Dusk, the short story that we're getting regurgitated at us here in the beginning of this book. In that postscript, he specifically talks about how this was not intended to be part of the Cosmere, and that he added it into the Cosmere later, or decided it was going to be part of the Cosmere later on. But I actually find that really fascinating, that the genesis of this story was supposed to be a standalone non-Cosmere story, and that it actually came from a writing ideas segment from his Writing Excuses podcast. That is where this entire book came from, or at least the start of it was from his podcast. Thought that was kind of cool. The other bit I'm going to bring to your information is the notes we get from Chris about the Dromenad system. If you haven't read Arcanum Unbounded, different systems in the Cosmere get little blurbs from the scholar Chris about them. I'm going to read you now the entirety of her note. It's only one page. Listen, pay attention, and then remember this for the rest of the book. Good luck.
Got it.
The Dromenad system. There are many planets in the Cosmere that are inhabited, but upon which no shards currently reside. Though the lives, passions, and beliefs of the people are, of course, important, regardless of which planet they reside on, only a few of these planets have relevance to the greater Cosmere at large. This is mostly due to the fact that travel on and off the planet, at least in the physical realm, is dependent upon perpendicularities, places where a person can transition from Shadesmar onto the planet itself. If a world doesn't have a perpendicularity, then it can be studied from the cognitive realm, but cannot truly be visited. In general, perpendicularities are created by the presence of a shard on the planet. The concentration of so much investiture on the cognitive and physical realms create points of friction where a kind of tunneling exists. At these points, physical matter, cognitive thought, and spiritual essence become one, and a being can slide between realms. The existence of a perpendicularity, which often take the form of pools of concentrated power on the physical realm, on a planet, is a hallmark of a shard's presence. This is what makes First of the Sun so interesting. The system, nicknamed Dromenad, has a remarkable three planets inhabited by fully developed human societies. There's also a fourth planet in the habitable zone. This is unique in the Cosmere. Only the Rosharan system can rival it, and there, one of the planets is inhabited solely by splinters. All four of these planets have water as a dominant feature, and one of them, the first planet, has a perpendicularity. I have not been able to discover why or how this perpendicularity exists. There is certainly no shard residing in the system. I cannot say what is happening, only that this feature must hint at things that occurred in the past on the planet. There is likely investiture here somewhere as well, though I have not yet had a chance to investigate First of the Sun myself. The area around the perpendicularity is extremely dangerous, and the few expeditions sent there from Silverlight have not returned. There you go. there's a bit of outsider information on Dromanad. And with that, let's jump into our prologue, which is not on Dromanad. It's on Yolin. What did you guys think about getting to see a little bit of Yolin?
What a treat. I've been waiting however many years for this. I was a little confused. Is there a sun on Yolin or not?
Unclear. Yes.
Starling seems so.
That's the whole thing. It's a sunrise that's coming up. And she...
Yeah, but she never refers to it as such. She refers to it as first light. So I feel like there was light without a sun.
No, but you're just grasping, Trevor.
Perhaps, but I was confused by the writing that there was light without a sun. But
first light. I mean, Yolin would have to be some extra kind of mythical if that's the case. I wouldn't walk too far with that. Even though that'd be crazy. What if there's just no suns, period? And I don't know. I'm trying to help you out.
What if there's like two trees, one's silver and one's gold, and they like
there light we go. To the planet. Illuminate without... the world.
Yeah, exactly. Just spitballing here.
Yeah. I bet that's never been done before. So if so, props to Brandon. I was also super excited to see Yolin. As soon as the name is mentioned, I'm sure everyone reading this who's like all in on the Cosmere leapt out of their seat and was like, yeah, we're there. We're at Yolin. We get some notable characters we've always gotten mention of too. We see Frost, right? So everyone's like the name drop, the planet we're on. This is epic. We're surrounded by dragons. Like, this is some crazy Cosmere wish list stuff, and we're in the first couple pages. So, I thought this was fascinating. So, what, the dragons have to be human for a little while so that they understand the humans before then becoming a full-fledged dragon. Is that right? That's what I was understanding.
Yeah.
That's what Starling was doing here.
Yeah, it appears to be almost like a metamorphosis moment.
Hold on. Back to what Paul said. For those of you who are not all in on the Cosmere and for some reason listening to this podcast, which is probably zero people, I have to shout out this one random person in this Facebook Stormlight group that keeps showing up on my feed, even though I say I don't want it on my feed. There's this lady who... I have to tell this story. There's this lady who read the entirety of Stormlight in this Facebook group and then read Tress and then read Isles of Emberdark. And she is now going to start reading Mistborn. And I was like, excuse me, what? your order, ma'am, is a little suspect. I have been waiting for Yolin for 8 years, and this lady waltzes in and gets to Yolin in 5 months. Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest. I appreciate being on Yolin. I am 100% sure this lady had no idea the treat she got when she opened the first page and it said Yolin. Sorry. Carry on.
Something I'm very interested to talk with you guys about that we have a long ways to go before we can is whether or not, well, let me rephrase. Where in your reading order does this book need to be? Or like, what are the options? Can you read in that order like you just threw out there? Or I've heard multiple people now claim that this is, as it stands right now, the capstone Cosmere book, that you need to read absolutely everything else before you pick this book up. I'm going to be very curious of your guys' take on that. I'm not going to weigh in anything on that right now, but we will for sure be talking about that when we finish.
Excited about it. That was my assumption, was that this was the last thing you're supposed to read, no matter the order that you read previously. Sorry, I'm going on too many tangents. We haven't made any progress. My fault.
You're right. For what it's worth, I am notably unconvinced of that. And although Yolin and Frost are names that should have a lot of significance to us now, I'm thinking that this might be not a capstone, but we're only a couple chapters in.
Just one more thing I'll add on the prologue before we jump into our dusk chapters is I was a little caught off guard, a little surprised pleasantly at the likableness of Uncle Frost. Our only yep. experience we'd had of that dude before was letters between him and Hoyd, where he's a little, dare I say it, frosty towards Hoyd. He's a little standoffish. He's a little, you know, hey man, I wish I could help you, bro, but I can't. It's kind of all your show. You got this. Good job. Good luck. And so I was a little bit, when I saw the name Frost, thinking, oh, he's going to be, you know, the same kind of like standoffish a little bit. He's like super friendly, chummy, cool Uncle Frost. Like, I want to be Frost.
Got someone to cover the prayers for today so we can go hang out and celebrate your Ascension Day, you know? Super chill, super great uncle award.
This is actually something I want to talk about in regards to Stormlight, if you haven't read Stormlight, go read Stormlight. Odium's out of the genie bottle. And that was Frost's entire excuse before of not getting involved was, hey, we got to keep Odium in the genie bottle. And at the end of Stormlight, Hoyd comes to the conclusion of, after he talks to his bone phone, wait a minute. Now people will get involved. So now we're at some future date, and Frost is here taking some prayers on Yolin. Presumably he's out of excuses to not get involved. I'm expecting Frost to be a player. Like, he has either previously done things or is currently doing things in the Cosmere on grand scale. That's what I'm expecting.
Uh-huh. Now we're asking some questions. This is the part where I now have to learn to have as good of a poker face as Trevor has for 5 whole years, never betraying anything. Let's see if I can meet that bar.
If it wasn't obvious with the amount of talking I've done in this episode so far, I am greatly enjoying the second or tertiary seat, whichever one I'm in, and get to talk about whatever the heck I want.
you do get to do that. All right, we do have some questions. I want to get to the end of this episode, so let's jump into our dusk chapters 1, 2, and 3. We can kind of probably hit all these together. We pick up with dusk. Trevor, you summarized this pretty well. Modern times, 5 years ahead of the dusk we've seen before from the little novella Sixth of the Dusk. He's struggling a little bit in a new world, a world that is quickly passing him by. What do you guys think about Dusk and how he's perceiving the world around him?
I'm excited. I'm going to talk a little bit about all the chapters at once, briefly. We're dropped in to this. Brandon does a good job. I figured, Elliot, that you would praise this because I feel like I had pretty clear imagery of what's happening. He's giving a little show and tell about these ants. He's a trapper, and he's got these ants, and he's showing these kids and their parents. And the kids are just, they don't care. There's like kids crying in the back. Nobody cares. But he's going on and on about these death ants and how if you take a bite, it has this like, it was like the Crocodile Hunter. The good old like Crocodile Hunter show is like the imagery I'm getting of him.
Crikey, mate.
Crikey, these death ants. If you get bit by one, you won't take 3 steps before you die. You know? And these kids just don't care. I'm like, man, y'all are missing it. This is awesome. Like,
field trips are wasted on the young. Let me put it out there that kids should not go to the aquarium for the day. I should go to the aquarium for the day during work.
Anyways. So they're getting this whole presentation about these death ants, and no one's really paying him much heed. No one's really paying attention. No one's engaged. And he thinks to himself, like, how surreal is it that these ants in this jar were what struck the biggest amount of fear into even the most skilled trappers for years, for centuries and such, and now they're simply just bugs in a jar, right? Like, the development of time and technique and whatnot, they've been able to catch these death ants. It changes the perspective. People are comfortable with it. And I thought it was setting a really, really neat scene. One for that, but I love this imagery. As a boy who grew up loving the Crocodile Hunter and any kind of nature show I could watch on Animal Planet, watching animals, particularly like reptiles and stuff, I'm like a kid in a candy shop. I feel like with this and with, I have to admit that I, starting these chapters, this felt like a breath of fresh air, and it's not necessarily peaceful at times, but like, I don't know, slow paced and just a bit peaceful, relaxed. In chapter two, you get the imagery, the beautiful imagery of just the sound of the oars in the water and how that brings him so much peace, just kind of this open water rowing and using his sextant and these things like that to guide, being a navigator. I was enthralled by the imagery. And so I'm already, we're three chapters in, I have very high hopes for my investment in this secret project. I think it's beautiful. I'm like, Dusk is just so cool. If I had an occupation in the Cosmere, I think I would want to be a trapper. Like that's what he talks about here. It wouldn't be the most glamorous. It wouldn't be the coolest thing to do in the Cosmere. But man, I think it's so cool. So there's my two cents there.
Paul, you've done yourself a disservice. One of the big points in chapter two is he's not using his compass. He's not using his sextant.
He doesn't use the stars, but he has it.
He has them, and he's achieved the point where he doesn't need them.
You are right about that. You are correct. I'm thinking about myself there. I think, I don't know if y'all agree with this, but I've had a theory for a long time that every man deep down would totally be on board if they could hypothetically drop responsibilities and go like sail the open sea with some sextant and ornaments. Like,
yeah,
absolutely. That's what I want to do. You know, that'd be awesome. So this is really scratching that itch for me.
All right. Let me set the scene of Six of the Dusk and see if I'm going to keep calling this book Six of the Dusk, even though it's not. Isles of Emberdark. And let me see if I got this correct. We have the ones above who want desperately to trade with First the Sun. They want the birds. They are so keen on grabbing these birds. The problem is there's some treaty, which I don't know if we learned about this in Sunlit Man or if I made this up or where, but you're not allowed to like impede on developing planets and freak them out. Like in the Cosmere, Silverlight, Elantris, or Cell, I guess, whoever is leading the technology isn't allowed to impede on the developing planets. Once you reach a certain level, then you're allowed to go talk to them. I don't know where I got that from. I don't know if that's canon or not. Someone let me know. Whoever the ones above are can't help themselves. They can't wait for these AVR. Therefore, they're going to conveniently drop the starship, I think is what is in Six of the Dusk novella. And they drop like updated maps we see in chapter two that are way more accurate than anything that they've come up with for their navigating. And then they drop cars on us in chapter one. And we're just supposed to deal with that. So from what I understand, we have this planet who timeline wise is like the 1700s. We're just discovering the new world. We're sailing the oceans. We're on the cusp of like the Renaissance of navigation and, you know, all of the technology that goes along with that. But the ones above can't wait and they're super impatient. So they're trying to hurry us on our merry way and get us up to speed so that they can trade with us. So now we have Six of the Dusk, who is our protagonist, who prided himself on being a trapper. And then the ones above showed up, and now being a trapper doesn't mean anything. So that's the problem. And how do you deal with that as a person who was raised to be a trapper, told this is the pinnacle of being a professional is wayfinding the old fashioned way, and now none of it matters? That's really fascinating.
And folks, that is Isles of Emberdark. We will move on to the next in the Cosmere.
Next book in the Cosmere? Yeah. If you're hiding one over there, let me know.
Yeah, this is it, isn't it? We better take our time. I don't feel like I need to correct you on any of that.
So it's really, all that to say, I think it'll be really fascinating what Brandon does with this. How do you handle someone who was raised to be in the old world and is thrown into the new one? And what does that do to your identity? Fascinating. I'm excited about it.
So I guess that leaves...
Well, go ahead, Paul.
So I was going to say, I feel like that leaves us with... by the way, Trevor, well done with that summary. I think that was actually very succinct. The questions I have remaining are some of the things in Chapter 3. One, because you have a crazy accusation.
I do.
In the outline. Two, because Elliot has a good question in the outline about some of our characters that we see here. I don't know if that's what we're ready to talk about, or Elliot, if you have other things you want us to focus on before we move forward.
Let's touch on one thing real quick, because I think our Chapter 3 questions are going to lead us well into kind of some speculation of this book as a whole. Real quick before we go there, Chapter 2 is a flashback. So if this wasn't already apparent, it's kind of spelled out in Brandon's preface or intro or whatever he wrote there at the beginning. We are going to see the entirety of Six of the Dust, the novella, kind of reprinted here in this book as flashback. However, I did not reread the Six of the Dust novella prior to reading this book. I am doing so now. So as I'm rereading these chapters for these episodes, I am reading them side by side with the novella to see if I can find what he changed.
Okay, interesting.
In this very first one, he changed a lot. Not
really
the content of like the story, but he added almost an entire page, which is a lot because that entire chapter is like 4 pages. He added an entire page all about the wayfinding.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that. The whole hand in the water thing was new.
Yes. Yes. So the little bits about kind of comparing the technologies, the compass and the sextant versus the sticking your hand in the water and feeling the direction of the waves so that you know kind of where the land is. He goes into much more detail here than he did in the Sixth of the Dust novella. So this is my little plug of, I think it might be a little dangerous to skip these chapters. It might be tempting, especially if you've read Sixth of the Dust recently, just like Brandon says, to go, oh, wait, I know this, skip. Just based on this first one, this is the first one I've done this, where I've read them side by side. There's a solid 250 words that he added. So it might be a little dangerous for us to assume that we know everything.
I know what the important addition was.
What?
When he sticks his hand in the water, he's like, it's almost as if the islands are talking to me.
Ah.
Moving on. I was like, hold up. That was not in the original.
Uh-huh. So I just wanted to highlight that. I'll keep doing this as we go and bring to you what some of the differences are as we go. But the Polynesian wayfinding, how do you sail the ocean when all you have is a notebook, your two eyes, and the waves beneath you? And the Polynesians did this. And Brandon, I think, says he's very fascinated by this and wanted to write books about it. I think that's in the little postscript from Arcanum Unbounded as well, as his fascination with that. So more details coming through in that. And I think that's all I'm going to say for now, so we can jump into our questions, accusations, predictions, whatever you want to call them from Chapter 3.
And then Disney came out with Moana and stole his thunder.
Okay, so hold on. Yes, we have to talk about this real quick before we go any further. Brandon has posted an entire video on social media addressing this. There are maybe some easy to draw comparisons between Isles of the Underdark and the Disney movie Moana. Brandon hopped on a video to kind of say, hang on, even though my thing was published later, I actually wrote it first. So, according to Brandon, he wrote most of this book prior to the movie Moana coming out. And after the movie did come out, a lot of his readers, his beta readers or whatever, were giving him a lot of feedback of, hey, man, this is a lot like Moana. So he actually rewrote this book. He talks about this in this video on social media. He had to go back and do a hefty edit of this book to, these are his words, de-Moanify it. I want your reactions.
That's a good word.
I want your takes at the end of the entire book of how Moana-esque you feel like it ended up being, because I have thoughts on that that we won't talk about till the very end. But there you go. Brandon has addressed specifically that, yes, this seems a lot like Moana. He had to rewrite sections of it to try to make it not Moana.
I did hear the deep Moanify Isles of Emmerdark line. I don't know when it came up on my social media feed, but I did hear that before. Okay, chapter 3. I'm very excited about this. So the first actual character that Dusk talks to is Mother Frond, I think is her name. And she is briefly described as an older lady with darker skin than Dusk. And nobody knows who her actual close family is, some far off island. She's kind of always been here. Her real job is giving lore drops to chieftains and stuff like that. But her real favorite pastime is telling stories to kids. I was like, all right, hold up. That's cultivation. Has to be.
It's a pretty quick prediction there. Quick off the hip.
I am fully prepared for everyone to be somebody else in disguise in this book. That is my... I am suspect of every single person in this book.
All right, so just so I get this straight, you think we've found cultivation because she is a woman, has dark skin, and tells stories?
It specifically says she's a little overweight, which I think cultivation... More accurate, let me say this more accurately. More accurately, what's her face? Corvellium. This is Corvellium, not necessarily cultivate. She may not have cultivation at the time. And to put the cherry on top, she's a dragon. She's a dragon. We have dragons in human form already in this book. And Corvellium's a dragon in human form.
Currently, I cannot prove you wrong. It doesn't mean anything coming from me right now. Literally means nothing. So, yeah, could be. That could be cool. So next chapter, do you think she's turning back into a dragon and flying away?
No. That's like chapter 6 at least. But okay, it would explain some of the weird perpendicularity stuff that Chris doesn't know what to do with. It just depends on when. So, okay, now we're metagaming this. When did Chris write these excerpts on the planets? Because she's like, all right, there's definitely not a shard here, but there's definitely a perpendicularity. And then when she writes the Rosharan one, she's like, yeah, there's 3 shards on the planet, which there were at the time when Arcanum Unbound was published. So we can't spoil Stormlight. I get that. But it's cultivation.
All right. I am going to read a quote here. I was wanting to read this, whether you made a bold prediction here or not. Do whatever you will with it. There was just one thing that Mother Frond says that I thought worth pointing out. It's very brief. At the very end of chapter 3, she's talking with Dusk, and she says, sometimes we need a person who looks in from yesterday.
Ooh.
And that is all I'm going to do. Point that quote out. I am also fascinated by Mother Frond. Mother Fron tells a story. You guys remember who the story was about?
Cacoban.
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 AKA Darathil of the Wandersail. We already know it. He has this is a story passed down from Urshar.
Okay.
Doubling down on my cultivation theory.
I wanted your guys' takes on Cacoban. Cacoban the Navigator. Trevor, you seem to have already given me yours. Paul, what was your kind of initial reaction to Mother Fron and her story of Cacoban the Navigator?
Well, I did not initially put someone else's image on there. But if I had to pick someone, it would of course be Lightsong.
Well, hold on a second.
That's Shallan?
Wait a second. Flesh that out for me. How can Shallan be in three places at once?
Well, that was just fully a joke. I can't back that one up, I'm afraid, until Brendan Sanderson confirms it with some nifty stuff.
There was probably an easy answer to that. Shallan can definitely be in three places at once. She does it all the time.
Oh, you're right. I just missed a straight down the middle pitch. I can't believe it. It got accusatory. Elliot has more pressure asking these questions than Trevor had.
Let me say this real quick. On our competition that we're going to have at the end of this episode, I feel like I'm either swaying a lot of people to have a lot of faith in me because of how accurate I am, or pushing so many people away with how crazy I'm getting with this book. One of the two.
You guys are kind of campaigning a little bit for the competition we're about to have at this end of this episode. So, yeah, you're right. You may or may not be doing yourself some favors.
No, my actual prediction, it's not Darathil. We can't all in on the Wandersail. Not everybody's a Wandersail fan like myself. My actual prediction, genuine prediction here, the same world as what's her face from The Girl Who Stood Up. There is no daytime in both stories, and both stories go and look for the light. Cacoban sails the waters and goes and looks for the sun, there's no sun at the time, so he always sails at night. The Girl Who Stood Up always lives in darkness, goes and climbs the wall to go find Stormlight, I think, and brings it back to her village. Same planet, same lore, same thing going on. Wherever those two stories are from are the same location.
Okay.
Is there a quote we're supposed to get to contribute to this as well, or are we just rolling with the thoughts?
No, my quote was for Mother Fron. I don't have a quote from Cacoban. There's just the story that he tells of Cacoban, the navigator, sailing the endless night, and Trevor summarized it pretty well in his summaries where he's fighting monsters and he goes up against this is where I have to make sure I don't spoil things, the Dakwara and the giants that he sails in between, those kind of things.
I just remembered what I, okay, because you said, all right, here we go. Because you said Dakwara and not Dakara, like they say in the audiobook, that reminds me of the Uvala that are in the Wandersail. Now we are talking about the same place, I'm sure of it.
Ooh.
The Uvala are the people who live where the storm drains, where Darathil goes, and they go talk to the Emperor in the top room or whatever. Go read the Wandersail. The Uvara, Dukara, that's definitely the same language. Surely.
Just different words, but same language. Is that what you're saying, Trevor?
Right. Like same race. Same like ethnic language we're talking here.
All right. I hadn't put those two together, but I'll follow.
So naturally my instinct would want, this is not my answer, my instinct would always be to say Hoid. There's a lot of legend that has Hoid as some like messenger or some like, you know, spirit or something. But it's hard for me to picture Hoid skirting around fighting giants and things. Like, he's a little too... We have seen him fist fight, you know, and he's actually really good. But it's hard for me to stick him here. I wonder if we're actually going to get some crazy lore dropped in here. And this is going to be Frost. And that's going to be some of the cool connections. Is Frost is the old loving uncle now. But back in the day, he was this giant fighting, gallivanting champion. So then this book becomes a bit of a lore drop in context to Frost, thus setting up the future of the Cosmere as Frost will get involved.
All right. I'm liking those juicy thoughts there on Mother Frond and Cacobam. Anything else on these chapters from you guys before I throw some kind of bigger book prediction questions at you?
Read your quote that backs up my Mother Frond theory, please.
Oh, I already did.
You did?
Yep. It doesn't necessarily directly back you up, back up anything. It was more of a, hey, brain tickler. Sometimes we need a person who looks in from yesterday.
Got it. I guess I was assuming it was like a description thing or something. Okay. Got it.
All right. Let's shift gears a little bit and answer for me a few of the bigger questions. We've already gotten into quite a bit of this. So if you wrap this into stuff we've already said, great. Four questions here before our big book giveaway competition at the end. Four quick questions. We don't necessarily need to rapid fire these, but I don't want to spend too long spinning crazy theories on these. Just give me kind of your initial takes on each one of these questions. First question, how many planets do you think we're going to visit over the course of this book?
Point of clarification. I assume we the reader will see these planets, right?
Sure.
And secondly, we're three chapters in. Haven't we already seen three planets? We've seen Yolen, Patchy. So he's rolling up to Patchy, isn't he, in the flashback?
That's an island on for First of the Sun.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Yeah, that makes sense. So just two. Okay. My gut instinct is that, and I'm wondering if this is a red herring of a question, I'm going to go with three. I'm going to go say something crazy that we're going to see the third one somewhere, somehow. Going to go with three.
Okay.
Is this the Price is Right rules?
These ones are not competitive. I am not defining any super specific rules on these ones. These are
what more... do you mean they're not competitive?
The competitive one is coming, and I will spell out some rules for you.
I'm going to go with 3.1.
Okay.
Wow, Price.
No, my genuine prediction is 4. That's what I was going to say before Paul said 3.
Okay, 3, 4. All right. Reasonable answer.
Because of the thing you read where the Dromonad has three inhabitable planets or four inhabitable planets, and three of them were... three of them were already inhabited, plus Yolen, so four.
You were paying attention.
I was thinking about four because there's four in the system, and I was thinking we were going to see one more than we already have, but I was thinking for some reason that Patchy was a planet and First of the Sun was a planet, which was my bad. So, yeah.
I was really hoping one of you guys was just going to YOLO it and say 12.
You're 14. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway, moving on.
Oh, we gotta find the magic number for the Dromonad system. You know how like Scadrial's 16 and Roshard is 10. We gotta find the Dromonad system one.
Mentioned investitures somewhere, but we haven't found it yet.
I have ideas already. Anyway, moving on. Okay, second question. How many familiar characters do you think we will see or hear mentioned? Again, I'm not going to hold you to like a specific number here. Gut feel. How many familiar faces are we going to see?
Well, so Frost would count as one?
Sure.
Okay.
I was going to ask the same question about Cokerly. Like, do Aviar
count? Oh, yeah, the two birds we've seen already.
I wouldn't Cokerly. Count anything we've seen from Sixth of the Dusk.
Right.
Okay.
Outside of that story.
That's a good distinction. Okay.
12. So everybody's going to be here.
Fairly high.
I had 9 written down. But that was like, okay, we've already seen Dusk and Cokerly and Frost, right? Who else is going to be in here that we already know? If we're taking out 6 of the Dusk characters, just looking at others, I'm going to go with 5. We're going to have like the Ghostbloods or something stroll up, and we'll see like a crew of 2 or 3 people we know.
Okay.
The Ghostbloods is a good shout out because I do think the ones above are Skadrian. I have vague memories of that. So, but 12 is a little crazy. I'll stick with it.
I don't think it's that crazy, I'll be honest.
Really?
Well, if you're taking out 6 of the Dusk characters, yeah, it's a little crazy, but
I will keep a straight face. There's one specific character I want to ask you about. That is a very familiar face, Hoid. How do you think Hoid will appear in this book, or will he at all?
Okay, I'm going to jump on this right away. Yes, he is going to appear in this book, and I would like bonus points if he appears as either... Well, okay, I think my prediction is I think he's going to appear as an animal. I would like bonus points if he's either a bug or a fish. I could see a talking fish, Hoid, appearing.
Like Wind Waker style, where every time you sail around to each island, the same fish pops up.
Yes.
Tells you something totally interesting about the island.
Absolutely. So if it's a bug or a fish, I get a bonus point, an imaginary bonus point.
I will give you lots of bonus points if he's a bug or a fish.
Okay.
I mean, he was a coat rack in a previous book.
Yeah, so. It's not unheard. It's not sure. That crazy. Oh, no. Trust me, I'm not crazy, guys.
Playing tricks on crazy. Hoid is a favorite pastime of every antagonist in the Cosmere.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, we're seeing Hoid. If we don't, I will be very disappointed. If we get Frost and no Hoid, that will be very sad. I mean, I assume it'll be late in a cameo. But I don't think he's actually in the story, but he will be here somewhere.
Okay, so like not Tress level, but not Mistborn Era 1 level.
If he writes a letter to Frost, that counts.
Okay. All right. Well, we shall see. We will raffo our way towards finding out if Hoid is in this book or not. Here's another question that I definitely wanted to ask you guys. How many characters do you think might die in the course of this book?
Does Cokerly count?
I mean, you can either factor that in or not. We have learned already, actually, in the difference between our flashback and current day, that Cokerly is no longer with us. So I guess factor that out beyond Cokerly.
Does Hoid as a fish and then regrouping himself on Skadrial in a petri dish count?
No. Like a definitive, we're talking definitive death.
Right.
Or somewhat non-definitive death, like if they die but they come back in a later book or something. I'm going to say if we're talking notable characters, which I assume we are, not like some, ooh, this happened and 5 random people went flying.
Correct.
I'm going to stick with 0. Brandon Sanderson does not kill his characters.
It's a bold guess, yeah.
I'm hoping for an honorable death, but I'm going to go with 0.
Surely this is the book where we reverse the tides. Surely. I'm going to go with a bold 2.
2?
A huge guess of 2. Actually, let me No, I'm going to go with the bold guess of 1.9. So I beat the tiebreaker if it's one.
You and your decimals. You are getting competitive here for my last question.
Then I change my to 0.2, characters will die.
All right, fine. Okay. You can have one. I'll hold two and you can have 0.1.
Okay.
0.1 deaths.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, well said. Well guessed. We will find out how accurate you may or may not be as we go. All right. That brings us to the big moment. We announced this at the beginning of the episode, and we are now here. We are giving away a copy of the book, Isles of the Emberdark. However, you're going to have to win it. We are going to have a little competition here. We're going to have a competition between our two friendly co-hosts that I've got here, Paul and Trevor. They are fighting for bragging rights. You guys out there are fighting to try to win the book. I'm going to ask them a question. I'm going to ask them this question right now. They are going to answer it. They're not going to reveal their answers right now because we're going to keep this going. And the challenge to you guys out there is going to be to guess how wrong they are. It's going to make sense in a second. As soon as
you mean how right we are. What kind of phrasing is that? You have no faith.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you.
I'm a little offended.
I have some faith. I have faith in my co-hosts. You guys out there are guessing how right they are, how spot on they are going to be with their answers here. Okay, here's the question. Here's the question we're going to centralize all this around. I'm going to spoil something very, very tiny for you guys right now. Starling is going to be a main character in this book, a primary character. That's not immediately apparent from the chapters that you guys have read so far. She's in the prologue. Brandon probably wouldn't have introduced her if she wasn't going to be, but I'm going to spoil it now. There are going to be two main characters in this book. One is Dusk, one is Starling. My question for you guys, on what page of this book will Dusk first speak directly to Starling? The book I'm using for this, of course, is the book that I have in my hand, which is the Kickstarter edition of the book. There are 461, is the same as the one we're giving away. There are 461 pages in this book. It is very possible for you guys to guess that Dusk does not speak directly to Starling at all in this book. If you want to make that your guess, I want you to write down 462. The numbers are going to matter here because you guys out there doing this challenge for this book giveaway, I want you guys to guess how many pages off that you think Trevor and Paul's guesses are going to be. Trevor and Paul, you guys have already written down your answers for this. I'm going to have you talk about a little bit of your thoughts going into this here in a second to give all of you listeners out there a little something to go off. Listen to what Paul and Trevor are saying. Get inside their heads. Put your Paul cap on, your Trevor hood on. He's in a hoodie right now. And think how they would think. How many pages off are they going to be the actual answer? If you're curious what the actual answer is, feel free to jump in our Discord and come ask me. We will have a channel where we are full spoilers on this book. I'd be happy to point you to the page that I found that I am using as my marker for when this happens, if it does at all. And so with that, Paul and Trevor, talk us through some of your thoughts. Maybe Paul, give us your thoughts first. What do you think? Without fully revealing your answer.
Okay, without revealing what my page number guess is, my thoughts with this book were that it's not going to be a series, a long ongoing series. So my meta prediction is that our characters will meet, but it'll be down the road a ways. So I don't know when exactly, but I think I got really close. I don't think I got exactly the page, but probably just a couple pages off, if not right on the money. So later on, to metagame it a little bit, if he's asking this question and then we open the page to book four and then they're talking, I think that'd be lame. So yeah, we're going to build up to it. The suspense is going to build, and then we're going to reveal that Paul was right on the money with his guess.
All right. Here's my logic. Ready? Elliot gave away too much when he designed this game. He explicitly said in the same breath, I'm going to orchestrate a game for you and Paul. And then he said, don't flip through your book no matter what, on the same breath. So, what does that tell me? It tells me exactly one page that it's not, and it's that last page that they do at some point meet. So that is off the table. There's art of them meeting. That's the conclusion I've come to. Now, as I thought about this, I was scrolling Facebook, and I got the question from Elliot the same time I was scrolling Facebook, and I saw a meme, and it was a meme about a book, and the meme went to the tune of when you are fill in the blank amount of pages into the book, and I don't remember how the meme ended, and I used that number. So whatever that number is, that's the idea I came up with, and there's my logic.
So you picked your number based off of a random meme you saw on Facebook.
Correct.
Okay.
When you are this many numbers into a book and something happens, I don't remember what the meme was, but there you go. That's the number I used.
Well, there you have it, guys. Read whatever
you want. That's my educated guess.
I see. I'm very curious how this is going to play out now. All right, there you go. You have some thoughts. What I want all of you guys to do for this challenge, I am going to link everybody to a Google form where you guys can jump in and give me answers to this question. We will link it in the description of this video. We'll put it in our Discord. You'll be able to find it in either of those places, so YouTube or Discord. Trevor assured me he could put it on like Spotify and things like that too.
Yeah, I can put links in Spotify descriptions, but I'm not sure they're actually links. I'm not confident people can actually click on them. They'd have to like do it the old-fashioned way and copy paste it into something. Anyway,
so you might have to do a little bit of digging to find my links, but our YouTube video for sure, our Discord channel, that's two places that you will definitely be able to find this link. Hop on there and tell me how far off you think Trevor and Paul are going to be. How many pages away is Paul's guess from the actual answer of when Dusk first speaks to Starling? And remember, if that never happens in this book, we're treating that as the imaginary page after the end of the book. So we will count from that non-existent page for that, if that is the case.
What did you say? 460 pages or something like that?
There are 461 pages in the story. So 462 will be the number we treat for not having. Oh, there's one more bit. And this is important too, especially with everything that Trevor just spelled out for his methodology. It's possible we could have a tie. So I do actually need a tiebreaker. I'm going to slap a tiebreaker on this as well. As a tiebreaker, I would like you to pick which of the two guesses, Paul or Trevor, you want to be your tiebreaker score. You could think of this as your, you know, following note on fantasy team captain, if you will. If it comes down to a tie, I need to use
Captain one of Trevor your, for match week six.
I need one of your answers to be your tiebreaker. Please tell me whether you have more faith in Paul or you have more faith in Trevor.
I'm so glad we've waited 277 episodes to finally pit off the popularity contest between me and Trevor, and we'll see.
Do you have more faith in Paul's brain or the meme that Trevor was looking at the time he got the question?
There you go. And we're not going to leave the Google form open up for too long. We will need to close that fairly soon. So we will keep that open for probably about a month from when this episode goes live. So if you're listening to this after a month from when it was first posted, you might have missed it. But go check our link. If there's still time, get your answers in for a chance to win a copy, beautiful copy of Isles of the Emberdark.
So the scene where they meet is in about a month is what he's telling us. And so he has to close it before
You're trying to meta this so hard. You are looking for every little bit of info you can get out of this.
I've already written my answer. So, you know, it doesn't matter.
You can read all you want into any of this. I'm three steps ahead of you already.
Let me put it this way. I know how Brandon thinks. I am confident in my answer, and the number that came up fit approximately what my guess was going to be. That's why I used it.
So, Trevor, I grant you part of that. I think you do understand how Brandon thinks, but I don't know that you have the best recall of that after the fact. My evidence is you read Wind and Truth and said Kaladin didn't do anything in this book. And that is my case against Trevor in this argument.
I also said two people would die in this book, so I don't know if
we're going big. We are going big. Alrighty. Well, that'll do it, I think, for chapters prologue through 3 of Isles of the Emberdark. I'm very excited to keep going into this book with you guys. Next week, we are going to be moving a little bit faster because we are going to have some flashback chapters with content that we're at least a little bit familiar with. So we're going to speed up the pace a little bit through a few of these intro episodes. So next week, we're going to be covering chapters 4 through 9 of Isles of Emberdark. And with that, thank you for joining me, Paul and Trevor.
See you next month.
See you next week.